up, y'all? I'm Stacy.
I'm Katie.
And you're listening to the first episode of Mothers Who Kill.
And if you can't tell it's the first episode, I don't know what to tell you.
Y'all don't know how many times we've re-recorded this intro.
This might be the millionth.
But anyway, Katie, do you remember the first case that made you true crime obsessed?
Yes, I believe her name was Andrea Yates. We were a senior in high school.
Oh, wow. I remember that case. Isn't she the mother who drowned all five of her children?
Yep, that's her.
My first case that I remember clearly was JonBenet. I remember being 13 years old and wondering what could have happened to her. I also remember this case that we're going to be discussing today very clearly, even though I was only 11 years old when it happened.
She murdered her children, then lied to the world.
I can't sleep. I can't do anything but think about it.
For 9 days, the nation searched in vain.
Susan Smith has been arrested and will be charged with 2 counts of murder in connection with the death of her children.
She slammed the door on him and let him know, deliberately, premeditatedly, murdered Michael and Alex.
Susan Smith, born Susan Lee Vaughn, was born on September 26, 1971, in the tiny community of Union, South Carolina.
Smith had a troubled childhood, to say the least. Her parents' relationship was often rocky and violent, with her father threatening to kill himself and her mother several times before the couple divorced when Susan was 6.
In January of 1978, just 5 weeks after the divorce, Susan's father committed suicide, and her mother quickly remarried to a local Republican named Beverly Russell.
As a teen, Susan was known as a good student, well-liked, and outgoing, even being voted friendliest female during her senior year of high school. At the age of 16, Beverly began to molest Susan. While it never progressed to sexual intercourse, Susan said that Beverly made her touch him while he was touching her. Susan reported the abuse to a school counselor, as well as her mother. Her mother appeared more concerned with the fact that the family would be subjected to public embarrassment than protecting her daughter.
And this is why I never came out with mine.
Beverly was arrested, however, and removed from the home for about a month. But after a few counseling sessions, he returned home and the molestation continued.
During the summer of 1988, Susan got a job at the local Winn-Dixie grocery store, where she became sexually active with 2 men, a married older man who worked at the store, a younger co-worker, as well as continuing a sexual affair with her stepfather. Susan became pregnant and had an abortion. The married man ended their relationship, and Susan's reaction was to attempt suicide by taking aspirin and Tylenol. While being treated in the hospital, she admitted to a similar suicide attempt when she was just 13 years old.
After her recovery, Susan returned to work at Winn-Dixie and quickly began a relationship with her co-worker, David Smith. David was engaged at the time, but ended his engagement to start dating Susan. The couple's relationship moved quickly, and Susan discovered she was pregnant. They married on March 15, 1991, and on October 10, 1991, the couple welcomed their first son, Michael Daniel. The couple showered the child with love and attention, but having a child could not help the differences in the newlyweds' backgrounds, which began to put a strain on their relationship. Susan was known to be more materialistic than David and often turned to her mother for financial help. The couple began to argue a lot, and both Susan and David began to have affairs. By March 1992, the Smiths were separated, and over the next 7 months, they tried off and on to mend their marriage. When Susan announced her second pregnancy in November of 1992, the couple reunited. They borrowed money from Susan's mother for a down payment on their first home, believing that it would fix their troubles. But over the next 9 months, Susan became more distant and complained about being pregnant. By 1993, David felt lonely and isolated, so he had another affair. But after the birth of their second child, Alexander Tyler, on August 5th of 1993, Susan and David reunited yet again. But of course, the reunion was short-lived, and within 3 weeks, David had once again moved out, and the two decided that the relationship was over. Not wanting to work at the same place as David, Susan took a job at Conso Products as a bookkeeper. She was eventually promoted to executive secretary for the CEO of Conso, J. Carey Finley. Susan also met Finley's son, Tom. And in January of 1994, Susan and Tom began casually dating. However, their relationship was short-lived because Susan and David reconciled for a few months. By September, she was dating Tom again, and while planning their future in their mind, Tom, in the meantime, was trying to figure out how to end his relationship with Susan.
On October 17, 1994, just days before David and Susan's divorce papers were filed, Tom Finley sent a Dear John letter to Susan. His reasons for wanting to end their relationship included the differences in their backgrounds. He was also adamant about not wanting children or wanting to raise her children. He encouraged Susan to act with more self-respect and referred to an episode when Susan and a friend's husband were kissing each other in the hot tub during a party at Tom's father's estate. Finley wrote, "If you want to catch a nice guy like me one day, you have to act like a nice girl. And you know, nice girls don't sleep with married men."
Susan was devastated when she read the letter. She became depressed and desperate to keep Tom in her life. In an attempt to get Tom's sympathy and attention, Susan confessed to him that she was still sexually involved with David and her stepfather.
Dun, dun, dun.
When that didn't work, she told him of her alleged affair with his father and warned him that the details of the relationship might come out during her divorce with David. Tom's reaction was one of shock, and he reiterated that the two of them would never again have any kind of relationship. Any hopes to claw her way back into Tom's life were destroyed.
On October 25th, 1994, Susan Smith spent the day obsessing over the breakup and how to win Tom back. As the day progressed, she became increasingly upset and asked to leave work early. After picking up her children from daycare, she stopped to talk to her friend in a parking lot and expressed her fears over Tom's reaction to her sleeping with his father. In a last-ditch effort to sway Tom's feelings, she asked her friend to watch the children while she went to Tom's office to tell him the story was a lie. According to her friend, Tom did not appear happy to see Susan and quickly got her out of his office.
Around 8 p.m. that night, Susan strapped 3-year-old Michael and 14-month-old Alex into their car seats and began to drive around. In her confession, she stated that she had wanted to die and was headed to her mother's house, but decided against it. Instead, she drove to John D. Long Lake, where she drove onto a ramp, got out of the car, put the car in drive, released the brake, and watched as her car, with her sleeping boys inside, plunge into the lake. Susan watched while the car drifted and sank, then ran to the nearby home of Shirley and Rick McLeod and frantically knocked on their door. She told the McLeods that an African-American man had taken her car and her boys. She described how she had stopped at a red light at Monarch Mills when a man with a gun jumped into her car and told her to drive. She drove around some, and then he told her to stop and get out of the car. At that point, he told her that he wouldn't hurt the kids and then drove off with the boys, who she could hear screaming and crying for her.
"Let me take them." And he said, "No, he didn't have time because they were in car seats and it was going to take time for me to get them out of the car seat." And he just told me, he said, "But I won't hurt them." And he just took off. But he had a gun. And my big thing is they were screaming, hollering, crying. And I'm just scared that he just lost his patience or something.
I plead.
For 9 days, law enforcement searched for the would-be kidnapper and the boys. Friends and family surrounded Susan in support while David had returned to her side as the search for the children intensified. As the tragic story of the boys' abduction circulated, national media outlets began arriving in Union. Susan, her face spotted with tears, and David looking distraught and desperate, made a public plea for their safe return.
Meanwhile, Susan's story was beginning to unravel. One of the biggest clues that led the authorities to believe that Susan was lying was her story about stopping at a red light on Monarch Mills Road. She stated that she saw no other cars on the road, yet the light turned red. The light on Monarch Mills Road was always green and only turned red if it was triggered by a car on the cross street. Since she said that there was no other cars on the road, there was no reason for her to come to a red light. Sheriff Howard Wells, the lead investigator on the case, had David and Susan polygraphed. While David passed, Susan's results were inconclusive. Susan was given numerous polygraphs and questioned about her inconsistencies throughout the 9 days of investigation. As leaks to the press about her discrepancies came out, reporters began to question Susan and accusing her. The people around her also began to notice her questionable behavior for a mother whose children were missing. She seemed overly concerned about how she looked in front of the television cameras and at times asked about the whereabouts of Tom Finley. She also had dramatic moments of deep sobbing, but would be dry-eyed and tearless. On November 3rd, 1994, David and Susan appeared on CBS This Morning, where David voiced his full support of Susan. After the interview, Sheriff Wells asked Susan to come in for another interrogation. This time, Wells was direct and told her that he did not believe her story. He badgered Susan, and as she became emotionally exhausted, she asked Wells to pray with her. Then afterwards, she began crying and telling him how ashamed she felt for what she'd done. After 9 long days, Susan finally confessed to allowing her car to roll into the lake. She claimed that she wanted to kill herself and the children, but in the end, she got out of the car and watched as her boys sunk to their death. Before breaking the news of Susan's confession, Wells wanted to locate the bodies of the boys. A previous search of a lake had failed to turn up Susan's car, but after her confession, she gave police the exact distance that the car had floated out before it sank. Divers found the car turned upside down with the children dangling from their car seats. One diver described that he saw the small hand of one of the children pressed against the window. Also found in the car was the Dear John letter that Tom Finley had written. An autopsy of the children proved that both boys were still alive when their tiny heads were submerged underwater. Stupid bitch. David briefly felt sympathy for Susan. However, that turned to horror as more facts about the murders of his sons surfaced. He had assumed Susan had shown mercy by killing the boys prior to pushing the car into the lake, but when he discovered Susan had supplied the police with the exact location of the car and that the lights had been on when she lifted the brake, he knew she had stayed and watched the car sinking, motivated by her desperate attempts to reconcile with Tom Finley. After finding out the truth, he was haunted by the images of his son's last moments.
During the trial, Susan's defense lawyers relied heavily on Susan's history of childhood trauma and sexual abuse, which manifested itself into a lifetime of untreated depression and suicidal thoughts. They explained that her abnormal need to depend on others for happiness led to the multiple sexual relationships she was involved in during her life. The bottom line was that Susan, as normal as she might have appeared, was a professional at hiding her battles with a dependent personality disorder and depression, which the defense psychiatrist diagnosed her with.
However, the prosecution showed the jury a more devious side of Susan, whose only concern was her own desires. Her children had become a major handicap in her ability to get what she wanted. By killing them, she would not only gain Tom's sympathy, but it would be one less reason for him to end their relationship. For the most part, Susan remained unresponsive except for when her sons were mentioned, which sometimes led to her shaking her head and sobbing as if she had any remorse for what she'd done. It took the jury just 2.5 hours to return a verdict of guilty of 2 counts of murder. Despite David's protest, Susan received a sentence of 30 years to life in prison. She will be eligible for parole in 2024 when she's 53. David has sworn to attend every parole hearing, trying to keep Susan in jail for the rest of her life. 26 years later, Smith, now 48, has spent more than half of her life in prison. Records obtained by People magazine show that in the past 9 years, she has been disciplined at least 5 times for various infractions, including self-mutilation and the use and possession of narcotics or marijuana. Each infraction has resulted in the loss of privileges, including loss of visitation, canteen, and telephone privileges. In 2000, Smith, then 28, was treated for an STD and was disciplined for having sex 4 times with 50-year-old prison guard Houston Cagle. He pled guilty and spent 3 months in jail. The following year, prison captain Alfred Rowe also pled guilty to having sex with Smith and was sentenced to 5 years probation. David Smith, the father of the boys and Susan's ex-husband, told People magazine in 2010 that he has never fully recovered from the pain. Quote, "There's always this nagging and gnawing heartache. It's there every day, even if I'm not always conscious of it." Okay, now that we've given you all a rundown on the case, we're going to give you our opinions on Susan.
Okay, class, can we all agree that she was batshit crazy?
The woman was nuts.
But not to excuse her behavior, she did grow up bullshit.
We can agree that watching her parents fight as a child and then knowing her father committed suicide, it did mess with her a little bit.
Okay, true, but we grew up in bullshit too, and we never had the urge to kill a kid. I don't have a kid. I've never had the urge to kill your kid, though.
Well, in the 17 years that I've been raising kids, I've never had the urge to kill my children. I might tell them, I brought you into this world, and I will take you out of this world. But I've never seriously thought about killing my children.
True. It seems like to me her only goal in life was to get approval from a man.
I think that's why she was in and out of so many relationships, or why she carried on affairs with numerous men at one time.
And this is why I say the first love we ever have in life is with ourselves.
I want to play a clip of one of the many interviews she did while the boys were missing, and I want your opinion on the tone of her voice.
I just can't express it enough that we just got to get them home. That's just where they belong, with their mama and daddy. I want to say to my babies that your mama loves you so much.
Okay, so is it just me, or can you not hear a grieving mother in any of that?
You don't even hear a human in that.
She had no sympathy for those boys. She strapped them in their car seats. let them roll off that bank, and never even attempted to save them.
So, basically, Susan Smith is trash.
She's trash. She's a narcissist. The fact that she's in jail having sex with these guards and being treated for STDs kind of shows you who she really is.
She's having the time of her fucking life while her boys are dead.
Okay, guys, I think we're going to end the episode here.
There might even be a part two.
There's so much stuff that I want to discuss. I just can't get it out there, I guess.
There's too much to discuss.
We want to thank you guys for being so patient waiting on this first episode. And if you listened all the way through, thank you for
sticking with us.
As you guys can tell, my brain is like a squirrel.
We're actually at the park right now, and there's so many squirrels in front of us, it's not even, yeah.
So I get distracted. I lose my train of thought quite frequently. That's one of the reasons why it took us so long to get this episode out. Anyway, thank you guys for listening.
If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, you will find our social medias under the description page.
Yes, in the episode description, or you can email us at motherswhokill@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook, Mothers Who Kill Discussion Group. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.
Have a good week.
Okay, so a little bit about each one of us. My name is Stacy. What's up, y'all? I'm Stacy.
I'm Katie.
And you're listening to the first episode of Mother's Fuck.
You always go for the F word. Susan Smith, born Susan Lee Vaughn, was born on September 26, 1971, in a tiny community of Union, South Carolina.
Susan had a troubled fuck. Remarried to Beverly Russell, a local fuck.
Susan Smith was born Susan Lee Vaughn. Susan Smith was born Susan Lee. In January of 1978, just 5 weeks after the divorce, Susan's father committed suicide, and her mother quickly remarried to a local Republican.
After her recovery, Susan returned to work at the Winn-Dixie and began to.